I went to the funeral of a cousin, the first cousin of mine, on Thursday in Texas, in Houston. In the Jewish faith, you know, we bury people very quickly. So you have to buy tickets very quickly, and the expenses are enormous. Blanche and I flew down, and there was a huge storm in Houston, and they were talking about having us land in Austin, and then, I don't know, bust to Houston. I don't know what they would have done. It was atmospherically very complicated. Up above the clouds, it was very calm. But we were descending into an upheaval, enough to totally distort our journey. In the end, it worked out. We landed just fine. There was a big time change, so we were very tired. And the funeral happened in a kind of blur, as is now the case for many funerals. In this tradition, people used to sit for 3 days, and it's called Shiva, and would mourn the dead. But nobody does that anymore. They didn't even have a funeral parlor. They just went right to the gravesite. Casket waiting for you. People gathered. They had nobody speaking except for the rabbi. So people sat. There was a lot of greeting of one another. Words were said. Coffin lowered. In the Jewish tradition, you throw sand on the coffin. So there was really no goodbye other than the sand on the coffin hits it very hard. And every time I've ever had to do that in my life, which has been unfortunately many times, the finality of sand, dirt hitting the coffin is potent. It has an enormous impact for everyone. The last funeral I went to, I got blamed for handing the shovel to somebody. And they said very clearly here, do not hand the shovel, put it back in the dirt, and let somebody do the entire task themselves. It's fine. After the funeral, we went back to the family house for a short kind of Jewish meal. A lot of eating at these events. And then we're all taken in cars to the synagogue, which was now armed outside with police, because of current events. And there was a service and then a huge banquet afterward. And then a lot of hugging. People said goodbye. We went home to the hotel, got on a plane the next morning and left. And it didn't hit me until I was on the plane going home that my cousin had died. It was so empty on some level. There was a lot of familial love and all the stuff that happens at funerals, people connecting with one another. There was a sense of life goes on. But in the old days, when somebody left the world, you stopped and you paused long enough to understand what that meant, that life had real value, that life was recognized. People often would get a chance to speak about the loved one. There was a kind of organic flow of events that helped engineer you into what was to come, meaning absence of somebody who was a part of your life. I was very saddened by the failure for that to happen. I was saddened by the fact that our family is diverse and most of the people could not make it to the funeral. It was a small contingent of people, because in the old days when my family was in Detroit and somebody passed away, hundreds and hundreds of people would show up, all to make their goodbyes. And we would sit for 2 or 3 days, drapes were closed, black crepe was put on photographs of people who had passed. It was a complete immersion in passage. You know, Tibetans go 49 days. 49 days of prayers for the soul that just moved on, because Tibetans know that the soul is on a journey. And in fact, it's a journey that needs instruction, which we do not prepare for in our culture. We just say, ciao, good luck. Hope you're all having a good time. You know, ashes to ash, dirt to dirt. Our ceremonial life has weakened dramatically. And along with it, an appreciation of what we mean to one another, how significant we are to one another. And when you just put someone in a grave and turn away, and you don't even walk around with a little band anymore telling people you're in mourning, you just walk around like nothing happened. So everybody is just going, hi, how are you? You know, it's like there is something to be said for loss in human life. There is something in loss that expresses the appreciation of what was. The what was is not even past tense normally, it is what is. When we are together, when we are sharing our lives, there is something so phenomenally rich and precious and something to be celebrated and loved, so that when the time comes to depart, there is a hole left in us that is not emptiness, but a doorway to a channel to fullness. People should carry our love and joy and our celebration into something vast and infinite. Instead, it's just they go into the ground, throw some dirt on it, finished. So I find that I'm still mourning my cousin Stuart, and will continue to, and I suspect others will too, but I have to do it now in the way that's prescribed for modern day people, which is on your own. Figure it out. We don't have the collective wisdom to tell people how to go about their journey. We are all on our own. The people who support us are often as ignorant as we are, as ill-informed, and don't know what to say or what to do, so we don't really support each other very well. We just continue. We continue and continue with life, totally caught up in what I will call the atmospherics of life. But it was wonderful that we flew in on a plane over the atmosphere, and then the atmosphere cleared enough for us to enter into the space of this familial event. What's extraordinary about flying is the metaphor of rising above the chaos, rising above the turbulence. Yes, you have some moments of, as you come in and go out, a little shaking maybe, but once you get above it, especially on those wonderful days where it's cloudy and rainy and miserable, and you get above and you suddenly see all the clouds, and then you are rising above the clouds, and the sun is out, and the sky is as blue as ever, and you know that there's something awful going down there on the ground, or maybe not awful, maybe a good storm and providing rain and for birds and trees and water and nourishment for things, but it's darker than it is up above the clouds. the metaphor of atmosphere and rising above the storm is so important. It is so important because my cousin Stuart is on a journey that is not being directed very well, that probably he was not well prepared for, rising above the turbulence and being directed into something greater. If you believe in the journey of the soul, if you believe in the return to the totality, to the what is, to the infinite, something actually is happening. There actually is a kind of ascension, if you will, into something that in a way has always been there. The Jewish ceremony at the temple that night was really interesting because all it talked about is God. It talked about God. It talked about light. It talked about ascended energies. And it had this remarkable, remarkable reminder that we sit once a week and remember that which we come from. Meditative practice tells us to sit every day and remember. And what happens to people who have announced their intention to remember where they come from, that God is in his heaven, open ye heavenly gates. If you can sit every day and remember, there comes a point where those gates open and the heavenly spirits, if you will, the realm of something transcendent, arrives and channels through you and speaks to you all day. And it is something that comes through from higher atmospheres into the turbulence of our day-to-day existence. Being able to rise up through the rainstorm into the brightness of the sky while you're sitting home in the pouring, thunderous rain is an incredible gift. And those who practice readily and regularly their spiritual work find that they have a conduit to or a channel to something that reminds them that even in the worst of times, there is this transcendent space which is above us, and if we stay open to it, within us and available through us to others. I always find the words in the liturgy of religion so beautiful, but also people simply repeat them and think that's all there is to do, when in fact they're instruction, they're directive. They're not telling us to simply repeat what has been said, they're telling us to do what has been said, to reach into this vast space and bring it through into this finite, materialized density of being that we inhabit. And when we do that, it starts to, in a way, sparkle. It starts to permeate. And we become these little beacons of light that help illuminate the dark space that seems to be around us. When you have an occasional storm, there's a certain pleasure in it. The rain comes, the day changes, the atmosphere changes, and we have this sense of activity, we have this sense of life-bringing energies that come out of storms, usually. And we can somehow sit and embrace the what is of it. But if you have a storm that lasts for many days, if you have storms that represent extreme weather, which are starting to happen and permeating our world, then sitting in it and just luxuriating in the transformation of the environment isn't going to work. The environment is in upheaval. Rising above the storm becomes harder. You may have to be diverted to Austin or elsewhere. You may not be able to get your plane off the ground. You may not be able to land anywhere that you want to land. This kind of weather, this kind of atmospheric, is very complicated and difficult, and it requires a whole new muscle system within you that can rise up above the tumultuous energies of the atmosphere and rise up no matter what is going on and reach into the sunlight. If you have developed a muscle for that, you will become a channel of light that moves through the atmosphere into the world and is like one of those special lights they provide for people in places like Seattle, where you have rain all day long, or up winter in upstate New York. You have these lights that bring you a feeling of sunlight and help get you through the day. You can become the living, manifested version of that light. You have the capacity. Those people who choose to sit still in the middle of the day and open to the brilliance of the higher energies that sparkle and radiate no matter what's happening below, and bring it down and bring it through, you become light, you become love, you become nourishment for others. Because we are entering into atmospherically charged times, according to scientists and reporters, only going to become much more so in times to come, we need channels of light. We need channels. And in a certain sense, they have to be self-selected. You can't program someone to be a channel of light. I mean, you can do something to people. If you cause enough suffering, pain, and grief in certain people's life, or love and longing, you can create a device, a mechanism that reaches for its own survival into the light. And people I know who've suffered greatly are more beacons of light than people who've had fairly nice lives. But also people who have understood somewhere in their meditative life that they can sit and they can regularly, daily do this workout. This workout, which means open, 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 or let me put it more gently, allow to open, allow to open, allow to open, all of these centers so that this exquisite, higher, clarifying, loving beauty of love and caring and compassion can move through you, cycle through you, and then enter the horizontal, if you will, of everyone around you, in the world around you, and you can become the source that helps people through their tumultuous day. And if more and more people are going to be going through this tumultuousness, they need you more than ever. And either you self-select to become that person, or you become the problem, part of the problem. I will tell you, in my experience, this atmospheric thing is becoming so potent that the muscle required to go, okay, 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 is greater and greater. You know, Rudy always said the muscle of spiritual work is the muscle of surrender. It's not how much you can hold on to, it's how much you can let go of. You just have to let go and let go and let go. And my discovery is, as the atmospherics become so active and pounding upon you, when they become thrown at you, you really have to do the work. You have to do it. You know, I went to put my hand out to a little, not to a Saint Bernard the other day, and he was coming over to me from a mailbox that his owner was at, And I just wanted to go, like, you know, put my hand out in some casual way that he could sniff me and know who I was. He went, and he bit my hand. He just bit me. And I was, what? I was doing everything right, but he was scared. And the atmospherics were such that I got bit. And then, you know, blood surging down my arm, and the woman who's at the mailbox is so upset, and, you know, and it hurt. And, but I was not that far from home, so I can go home and cleanse it. You know, and I had this, you know, I had this pulled IT muscle, which I've talked about. But anyway, I'm sitting in class today, and this dog bite is killing me. You can't even see it anymore. I mean, there's nothing there, but my whole hand still hurts, and it's throbbing, and my leg is throbbing, and the atmospherics are really potent. And I go, you got to teach a class here. You can't be sitting in your hand. You can't be sitting in your leg. You know, all of this stuff that's going on is like none of your business. It just is. It just is. There is a deeper, greater, sweeter, more dynamic energy at play than your own discomfort. And so it was wonderful in a way, because I had to work harder to let go of the distraction and just be present for you. That's in a way the great spiritual calling, to be present for the other, to show up for the other. And it's harder to do when life is hitting you hard. And right now it's hitting people hard. A lot of people, maybe not you or you or you, I don't know, but a lot of people around me are really feeling stuff. So all I can tell you is, this is the time to channel, meaning get still and open to something that transcends your pain and your difficulty. Be available and just allow this energy, which is multidimensional, vast, ancient, brilliant, and I can't give it enough adjectives or adverbs. I can only tell you it is the knowing, all-powerful truth of being, the ascendant energy that for some reason is available to you. In fact, not only is it available, you are constructed of it. You are one with it. And if you allow it in and you don't get caught up in the me and the I, but in the we and the us, this thing comes through and you become available to everyone in spite of your shit and your suffering and your pain. It's hard work. It's hard work, but it's important work. And I will tell you this, in the weeks, months, and years and decades, whatever we have left that are coming, you, I won't say this is need, although I think it is need, you can become the thing we're talking about. The world needs you. You can self-select based on nothing else but your goodness and kindness and humanity to be something that transcends your daily drama and reaches for this other thing that you can then share one-on-one with other people, or one-on-two, or one-on-five. And if you want to teach people, you can do that. You can become a teacher, either literally like this, or you can become a teacher who simply illuminates the world by walking around holding on to whatever ray of light you can find. I know this sounds cliched and corny, but I'm telling you, day to day, right now, the world needs that. It needs that. And you are the vehicle through which it can happen. And so I lay this out. I've been doing it every week now because I feel it's so important that we don't just sit back and remain students of this. You know, there's a certain point where the students have to become the teachers, or at least really good students, and share their lesson, share their understanding. This is the time, this is the date, not tomorrow, not on Tuesday, now, today. Make yourself available. Be the love that the world needs, because you do have that love, because you're connected to it, and because you care, and I know you do. I really wish the world would celebrate the lives of people who are lost. I really wish that we gave people their due. I wish my cousin Stuart had more people fly in from everywhere. I wish more people had a chance to speak their truth. I wish people sat around for days and celebrated his passing and his life. That is no longer the way it works. From now on, celebrate people's lives as they're living it. Celebrate it as they depart. Carry it in your heart and carry on your own private sitting and love for the people who have passed. And know that we are the temple in which all of these ceremonies occur. We are the temple. Be the temple. Be the person who conducts the service. Let your own words rise up into the heavens. Follow after the people who have left before you and tell them how grateful you are and have been that they were here. This is our job. We can't change the world really in that way, but we can maintain a connection to the purity of celebration and honor that goes into being a human being and caring about those who've shared our lives. Thank you. Any questions? Is that a nose wipe or a question?
I thought it was a namaste, but I didn't come up with a question.
That was a kind of a nose wipe namaste, but it was very nice. I'll take it as a namaste.
So, I get a lot of messages from my body. You were talking about the throbbings. And I get them sometimes in relationship to the circuit that you ask us to breathe. And sometimes it feels like the throbbing is a blockage, and sometimes it feels like it's a deficiency, and sometimes it feels like a lot of different things. And so I'm wondering, like, where do you draw the line? Like, where is the, so you're not getting wrapped up in, you know, just kind of some kind of weird pain that happened to you, but you are paying attention to, like, the process of opening.
The great answer to that question really has to do with the witness. And rather than being the pain, watch it. Watch what's going on from a very still point. And then, as I've often said, ask who's watching. Because the watcher's not in it. The watcher can engage it, but mostly the watcher is a very still-pointed awareness. Mm-hmm. And then the mind materializes out of the watcher to engage. Mm-hmm. But preceding the mind is that which is, and it just watches, and it has qualities of being. The key quality of being is it loves you. So I would encourage you to try to, even in the worst of pain, find that. It's not always possible, and as I've often said, Christ on the cross couldn't find it, so we have the We can't always find it. It comes when it wants to. But the goal, the effort, the trying to reach for that which observes, that which witnesses this life is worth it, because it's the witness that ultimately is the channel that allows us to transcend, to ascend, to reach into the highest parts of our own being. And in the beginning, we're not good at it. We struggle with it. But practice, the practice of letting go, asking for help to let go, to surrender, is a year-long, decades-long journey in which you get better and better and better at doing it. And at some point, you're really good at it. It will always be challenged. It will always be tried. No matter what level you get to, they'll find another level of challenge to give you, because it's a life's work. It is a life's work. And because I am now an old person, I'm telling you, it's more powerful and meaningful at the end of life than in the middle of life. Even though it's a good thing in the middle of life because you go through so much stuff. But at the end, you got nothing else but this. Everything else is going away. Everything. You know, except for the pain. Pain will stay there. The confusion starts to come in. The mind starts to go. The sight, hearing, all these things start to go. and the witness is still there. And if you've made peace with, connection to, love with the witness, you have this deep abiding quality that you know supports you, loves you, and will be there even when everything else is gone. So the practice is important. Okay,
cool.
Anyone else? Kidoka. Thank you. Thank you for coming. We are here next week, and then the 2 weeks after that will be in LA. Okay, so there won't be, well, there probably will be a class, but I won't be here.